When I was five, my mom took this video of me because it was my first time watering the greenhouse by myself. Over the years, I've learned to seed, weed, prune, and plant. I remember it when my sister, Emma, harvested her first bunch of kale. The picture even made the family yearbook. I know not every kid grows up this way, but I wish more could, because it teaches you important life skills like caring for the earth. I hope you can visit a local farm to learn more.
Hello, I'm Natalie Pien, pronouns she, her, hers. I serve with Tamar Dutton as co-chair of the Earth Justice Team. I am the first of three EJT members who will share thoughts with you about the relationship between food, plants, and a healthier planet. My part will be about how most of us get food, the pros and cons, and introduce alternatives. I would be remiss if I didn't acknowledge UUCL members Mel and Andy Dunham as being experts in sustainable agriculture. When asked, where do you get your food? Most people answer, the grocery store. But have you ever wondered where the grocery store gets food to sell? Most grocery stores today sell fruits and vegetables and meat produced by industrial agriculture, also known as factory farming. There are many benefits from industrial agriculture, such as, but not limited to, increased food production, lower consumer cost, more variety. But these benefits come at a price. Environmental concerns, treatment of animals, lower quality produce, potential health hazards, threat to small farmers. Food wasn't always produced in this way. In the early 1900s, more than half of Americans were either farmers or lived in rural communities. Most farms were small and diversified, producing a wide variety of crops and animals on the same farm in complementary ways. Then, industrial agriculture started with the introduction of synthetic fertilizers and chemical pesticides. Farms became large, doubling in size between 1950 and 1997, with less than half of all farms surviving. Today, half of all U.S. cropland is on farms that are at least 1,000 acres, that's 1.5 square miles, in size, and growing just one crop referred to as monoculture. The particularly bad news is that industrial agriculture is not sustainable. Is directly responsible for 22% of global greenhouse gas emissions, primarily by deforestation, methane emissions from raising cows and growing rice. An additional 12% comes indirectly from cooking, transportation, waste, and refrigeration. Altogether, industrial agriculture is responsible for fully 34% of total greenhouse gas emissions. Fortunately, there is a rise in sustainable agriculture that includes a variety of methods such as organic, agroecological, biodynamic, and regenerative practices. Sustainable agriculture does not use chemical pesticides, fertilizers, or genetically modified seeds. A diversity of crops and animals are raised in such a way to increase soil organic matter, sequester carbon instead of emitting carbon, prevent water and air pollution. Animals are treated ethically. Public health improves. Smaller sustainable agriculture farms support the local economy and employ more workers. The best part is that regenerative agriculture can actually reverse climate change. Regardless of where you buy your food or the diet you follow, the biggest impact each of us can make is to reduce food waste. 30 to 40% of the world's food is not eaten. In other words, almost 300 pounds of food per person is wasted. In the U.S. and developed countries, 60% of food waste happens in the household. The environmental and climate impact of food waste is extremely significant. In fact, food waste creates more greenhouse gas emissions than the aviation industry. It's critical to eliminate food waste at home. Eliminating all waste is not easily achieved, but please do not put it in the trash, where it will generate methane in the landfill. A much better alternative is to compost it either at home or the Loudoun County landfill, or by commercial composting services. In Loudoun County, we are lucky to have grocery store alternatives. We can shop at farmers markets, roadside stands, participate in community-supported agriculture, or even buy online. Tomorrow we'll share local food resources.
Thank you, Natalie, for that great overview of the relationship between climate change and food, and the importance of sourcing locally when you can. And show this again. This is a bi-local guide that was put out by Piedmont Environmental Council, and we have plenty of copies for every household to take, and there's lots of great resources in there. So, Loudoun County. Here's the good news. Loudoun's agricultural economy is strong, and there are a great many places you can go to purchase locally produced food and beverage. And more on the latter from Martha in a little bit. Loudoun has a venerable agricultural history. We were once the primary milk providers of milk to the region. And then when pasteurization made it possible to safely store milk for longer periods of time and therefore transport it over greater distances, the nation's capital no longer relied on Loudoun for milk production. That and other changes, more recently the pressure of residential development, led to the decline of Loudoun's once dominant dairy industry. But today, agriculture in Loudoun is thriving, in stark contrast to where we were. The most recent agricultural census, released just last month, shows that we are making a very significant transition from commodity farming, dairy and other wholesale products, to direct marketing from producer to consumer. So it's a really exciting time. In the last 5 years, we've added 73 new farms in Loudoun, probably more, but those are the ones that filled out the census. And that represents about 12,000 new acres of working farms. So we have a total of 1,332 farms, and fully three-fourths of them are smaller than 50 acres. We are doing more intensive farming, and by selling directly to consumers, we're adding a higher per pound dollar to the local economy. And Loudoun is certainly positioned to continue to grow and diversify its agricultural economy. We are a mostly affluent community whose residents care about supporting local agricultural businesses. We have lots of CSAs, one I think run by Andy. Those are community supported agriculture programs, as well as farmers markets, direct farm support. Again, lots of information in the back there. And we still do have small scale dairy producing, mostly producing cheese from cows as well as goats. And we have very high quality soils, the best in Virginia and among the best in the nation. Who knew? However, those soils are being threatened. In the last 5 years, the cluster subdivision has been heavily used for big rural lots. This zoning option requires that homes be clustered closer together in greater density, and that large areas be set aside for conservation. This sounds like a good idea, right? The problem is that developers prefer relatively flat land with higher quality soils that percolate better for septic, and that leaves the more rocky, woody, poor soils or steeper slopes for the open space. And that's by and large useless for farming. But here's the good news. The Piedmont Environmental Council, on which you sit on the board, right?
Yes.
The Loudoun County Farm Bureau and other groups have been leading a campaign to preserve prime farming soils that are being threatened by this residential cluster subdivision. And they've finally made some headway. In a very late night vote on April 10th, just 11 days ago, the Board of Supervisors voted 5-2 to forward proposed zoning changes that would address this problem to their June 12th meeting, where they will once again invite public comment before taking a final vote 4 years after this prime agricultural soils and cluster subdivision zoning ordinance amendment was introduced. So you have a chance to write and speak in support to help make sure we set the conditions for future success in Loudoun's agricultural sector so we can continue to source our food locally and make a difference for a healthy planet. Information about how to do so will be in a resource sheet that we've put together that will be emailed out to everybody this afternoon with lots of links to click. And there are many other things we can each do, choices we can make to help reduce our carbon footprint by eating and drinking locally. And to that end, here's Martha.
Now we come to the adult portion of the service. How you can make a difference to the climate crisis by drinking wine. We all know the ancient warning, in vino veritas, and the first truth we'll speak is to recognize that not everyone wants to go to a winery. There are people who are in recovery and understand that their lives are going to go better if they stay away from alcohol, and other people who have decided they aren't even going to start down that path, people who are still too young, and people reluctantly realizing that they can't handle as much liquid veritas as they used to be able to do. But it doesn't matter what's in your glass, milk from Loudoun County, or an exotic import like coffee, tea, or orange juice, because the veritas we're dealing with this April month of interdependence is the unbreakable connection between us and everything we touch in a very real and non-mystical sense. Every drop of anything you consume contains the universe. So look into a glass of wine, and you will see the seeds that developed into vines, that bore the grapes, nurtured with fertilizer, manufactured in factories, transported to the vineyards in trucks powered by gasoline, harvested by many hands and many machines, using fuel produced by sun, wind, and oil drilled out of the earth, stored in barrels made from trees, bottled in glass made from sand, stoppered with cork or in plastic bags and cardboard, poured into more glass, and whose byproducts are trucked to the landfill or composted to start the whole process again. All that's in every glass. And here's what goes into getting that wine onto our tables. There are 7 general processes. Planting and growing the grapes, that's what the vintner does, and requires about 1/4 of the total energy that gets the glass to your table. And making the wine, crushing the juice out of the grapes, putting it in containers, letting it ferment to maturity. This is the work of the producer, takes only about 11% of the energy. But here's the big one, packaging and transport. Done by the distributor, getting the wine from, say, Napa Valley to the shelf at Total Wine requires more than 1/3 of the energy in the whole process and makes the big carbon footprint, because how it's done, gas guzzling trucks rather than trains, for instance, is even more important than how far you ship it. Then storage, the job of both the distributor who gets it to the retail outlet and the consumer who has to drive to the store, then get it home, then keep it till it's time to drink. This is about 18%. Finally, disposal of wine, byproducts, and packaging. That's the responsibility of all 4 entities: vintner, producer, distributor, and consumer, and uses about 11% of the required energy. So obviously, the best choice is to make your own, store it in reusable bottles, and drink it at home in reusable glasses. But failing that, the most effective way to cut down on energy use and the carbon footprint is to drink wine that's locally made and and cut out all the heavy transport and refrigerated storage requirements. And we're lucky here in Loudoun because it's easy to do, whether you're going to drink it out or buying it to take home. Tamar and Sandy and I went over to Fabioli Vineyards north of Leesburg the other day to talk to Doug Fabioli, who knows everything there is to know about producing wine in Loudoun. There are about 50 vineyards in Loudoun, and they're networking with each other to become carbon positive and sustainable, both in the way they produce the wine and how they distribute it. So some of the things they're doing to reduce energy and carbon footprint are no-till farming, where they let the grass grow between the rows instead of digging up, plowing up the whole field, dry farming, using only natural rain instead of irrigation, spraying via drones, which uses substantially less energy than a fossil fuel tractor, introducing safer sprays such as hydrogen peroxide to bleach your grapes, recycling leftovers of production, for example, must, which is the name for what's left of the grapes after you take the juice out. They're doing community composting with neighboring farms, including horse farms, as well as other vineyards, and pulverizing their glass down to sand and plowing that back into the soil. They're also looking at different varieties of grapes that may require less water or less spraying. The question is if those will make wines people want to drink, or they'll be like those square tomatoes they grow for easy shipment. Turning to the construction of the buildings where all this goes on, there is a nonprofit organization called the U.S. Green Building Council, and they have developed a certification program called Leadership in Energy and Environmental Design, known as LEEDS. Quite a few Loudoun vineyards are constructing their buildings, both production and the public tasting rooms, according to LEEDS rating systems and getting LEEDS certification. Fabioli uses German geothermal energy, and Sunset Hills Vineyard, which is up at Route 9 in Berlin Turnpike, outside of Purcellville, produces 75% of their electricity with solar panels, which is claimed to be the equivalent of planting 240,000 trees. So Google Visit Loudoun, drill down to the winery links, and read about what steps they're each taking, and then carpool out and drink a local glass. And if you're lucky, Alan Benkovsky and his bass will be out there playing. As we noted at the beginning, this pertains to everything you're drinking. The bottom line is that we can fight climate change. We can make a difference that is real if we remember that the universe is in every glass and rally to support what our neighbors in the wine biz are doing to keep our planet livable.
The Earth Justice Team originally planned to include a segment in this service on racial equity in farming and agriculture. However, we felt it would be difficult to do justice to this issue in just a few minutes. So the next service that the Earth Justice Team conducts will be dedicated to addressing racial equity in our U.S. food system. Before we made this decision to put off to another service, I had already started doing some research to identify Black farm owners, operators, locally, regionally, and in the state of Virginia. The only farm I identified in the region is Hidden Gems Farm, located in Centerville, about less than a mile east of the Loudoun County line. Hidden Gems Farm is owned and operated by the Gibbs family since 2020. They let folks come to pick their own flowers, berries, and pumpkins. They make and sell just about every value-added goat product, with the exception of goat meat, to include soaps, lotions, milk, and ice cream. Their goal is to provide ethically sourced and incredibly flavored products with simple and organic ingredients to the community. So why am I telling you about Hidden Gems Farm? Well, I visited the farm a few weeks ago to check out their farm store and the products they sell. The farm store is open 24/7 on a self-serve honor system basis. I bought a selection of the goat milk soaps and lotions, which will be available for bidding on during the UUCL service auction. The goat milk soaps come in a variety of scents such as eucalyptus peppermint and white tea cucumber. The goat milk lotions, which are my favorite, are wonderful and do not leave a greasy feel afterwards like many lotions do. It would be great if you can support Hidden Gems Farm, whether that's through the UUCL service auction or visiting their farm store in person or online. The location of the farm and their website address is going to be provided on a resource sheet that will be sent out via email through the announcements. Is that correct? So if you're interested in visiting them, again, they have a full line of all their products are provided online that you can order, and they even ship to consumer.
I was in fourth grade when I started noticing things about the school, such as the bathrooms were the worst, and they were always graffitied. But the most important of all was that the school did not compost, and I wasn't sure if they recycled either. Everything went to the same place, the trash. In fifth grade, I decided to do something about that. I asked my teacher and my mom to help make a presentation that we showed to the principal. She loved the idea, so the next step was to ask the cafeteria workers if they could keep two buckets in the kitchen and clean them at the end of the day. This was especially important because if they said no, we'd have to think of a different system. It is essential if you are thinking about doing something about anything, really, to ask the people affected to make sure everyone's okay with it. Finally, the last step was to ask the fifth graders. During one recess, it was indoors, me and my teacher went to the other fifth grade classrooms, and I gave a presentation including things you can and can't compost and how it works. Eventually, we came up with a system. Then my classmates and I would rotate to be helpers and take it out to the compost in the school garden. One of the things I noticed about this project was that I had to be patient and couldn't rush things. That goes for many projects and campaigns you do. I hope everyone here feels comfortable that if they see things that they think are wrong, they can say or do something about it. But remember, even if it isn't a sci-fi adventure, always, in Bill and Ted's words, be excellent to each other.